I'm turning back to the passage that we had read to us a few moments ago. If you've got a church Bible, it's on page 73 in the New Testament sections. It's Luke chapter 14. That's where we're going to be focusing tonight. I can remember sitting, or rather standing, in the tube at Bank Station once. And they'd got the tape announcement all wrong. Long after the doors had closed, the tape started off, "Mind the gap, mind the gap." And about the third "mind the gap," someone clearly pulled the switch and it ended in a strangled screech. "Mind the The man who was standing sort of nose to nose with me smiled mischievously and said, "Got him at last." Well, you may be feeling that way about this, mind the gap, but just hold on tight. We're on the last leg. I am going to finish tonight. I hope it won't end in a strangled screech. But it is going to be one last warning, one last encouragement to us to mind that gap between ourselves and God. And it comes in this story that Jesus told at one of those dinner parties, which if you'd been there, you would never forget. It was a rather posh affair. We discover right at the beginning of a chapter it took place in a ruler's house. And they'd obviously invited the visiting speaker, Jesus, back to lunch. Some people like roast preacher after a sermon, and they were clearly trying their hand at it that day. But there was an intruder there, a sick man, and Jesus heals him almost defiantly because his guests thought it improper to do any work on the Sabbath. They were churchmen with a religion that barred them from doing good. They're churchmen, we discover, with all kinds of false values. They're hard-hearted about the sick, and they're also status seekers. For no sooner do they sit down than we see them scrambling for the best seats next to the important people. So Jesus gave them a lecture on elementary manners and social climbing, the kind of thing that your mother gave you when you were I don't know what age. Don't automatically assume, he says, you've got a seat at the high table. It does get very embarrassing when you have to stand up and move down. And then, as if that wasn't bad enough, he turned the screws one notch further and applied it to their relationship with God. They shouldn't automatically assume they'd got one. So if, by the way, you're a regular and you're here tonight thinking, well, this is one of those nights which is not really for you, it's just for the outsiders, please don't switch off. Might be all too pertinent. And then Jesus goes on to tell his host what sort of a dinner party he ought to throw, who should be on the guest list, not the kind of people you could guarantee will invite you back. Now, you don't invite with an eye to the return. That kind of incestuous social whirl. Invite the kind of people who couldn't possibly have you back. That's the spirit, he says, that'll be recognized at the resurrection. Now, do you know those kind of instances when you can be in a gathering, and I don't know how we do it, but we somehow or other sense that there's some kind of scene going on the other end of the room? It probably started as a conversation between two or three people. But you know that awkward habit that comes in when you suddenly realize that everyone else is listening in on it. You were talking about the person who was safely down the far end of the table when it happened. You know, it really wasn't for their ears. And of course, if you're speaking, you don't realize until too late what's going on. Well, I don't know whether something like that was happening, but undoubtedly there was acute embarrassment at the dinner table. And if you're British and there's acute embarrassment, you do your best to deflect it, don't you? You want to try and find some line that'll jolly everything along so that we can switch the subject. And I think that's where the bit we had read starts off. Look, verse 15. When one of those who sat at table with him heard this, he said to Jesus, "Well, blessed is he who shall eat bread in the kingdom of God." Yes, won't it be good to be in heaven, Jesus? It'll be wonderful to be sitting down at dinner in heaven, won't it? Ho, ho, ha, ha. And Jesus says, yes, it will, but what makes you so sure you'll be there? Yes, you wouldn't have forgotten this dinner party, will you? You see, he really can be a most uncomfortable character. People delight in trotting out lines about how Jesus is at home in any kind of society, and it's true. But you wonder sometimes whether society was really at home with him. He didn't put it quite as bluntly as that, though the implication of his story was just as crystal clear to his hearers. Listen to it again. He said to him, Jesus said to him, a man once gave a great banquet and invited many. And at the time for the banquet, he sent his servant to say to those who'd been invited, come, for all is now ready. But they all alike began to make excuses. The first said to him, I bought a field, and I must go out and see it. I pray you have me excused. And another said, I bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I go to examine them. I pray you have me excused. And another said, I've married a wife, and therefore I cannot come. So the servant came and reported this to his master. And then the householder in anger said to his servant, go out quickly to the streets and lanes of the city and bring in the poor and maimed and blind and lame. And the servant said, sir, what you commanded has been done, and still there's room. And the master said to the servant, well, go out to the highways and hedges and compel people to come in, that my house may be filled. For I tell you, yes, and here was the sting in the tail, none of those men who were invited shall taste my banquet. Now, we're just going to spend a few minutes tonight looking at that story and looking at some of the characters involved. Let's begin, if we may, with the host. He's described variously, this host, a man, the master, the householder, but it's quite clear that Jesus is using him as a picture of God. And this story reveals to us something of God's attitude and God's nature. You'll discover, if you'll study it with any detail, that he's someone of extraordinary generosity. Well, it's there right at the beginning. Jesus said to him, verse 16, a man once gave a great banquet. See, Jesus makes the telling point in this story that there really isn't anything stingy about God. The killjoy of so many people's imaginings turns out to be an entertainer on a lavish scale. And we do need to keep this perspective, don't we? One of the most prolific bits of disinformation going around today about the Christian life in heaven is that they're dreary things. By definition, anything that's fun must be out, if God's involved. I still get asked by people who are weighing up the Christian life, listen, if I were to become a Christian, could I still go to parties? I can't help chuckling. I mean, some of them you'd be very wise to give a miss to, but Jesus was constantly going to them. And he describes heaven here as like a great banquet, a tremendous feast. Groucho Marx, I think, who once said to his hostess at the end of a dinner party, I've had a wonderful evening. This wasn't it. Well, you won't say that of heaven. Really will be a great banquet. Anyway, it won't come to an end for you to be able to say it. Yes, there's a sting to this story, but the sting doesn't challenge the rightness of the sense of anticipation that everyone had. The banquet in the kingdom of God is the place to be. Make sure you get an invite. To have one is pure gold. See how generous God is? There's no stinting. When he comes to throwing a party, it'll be a great banquet. And he's invited many, you notice. Indeed, by the end of the story, we discover he'll have anyone at it. Look, verse 21. Go out quickly to the streets and lanes of the city and bring in the poor and maimed and blind and lame. Verse 23. Go out to the highways and hedges and compel people to come in that my house may be filled. He's generous with his preparations. He's generous with his invitations. Compel them, insist they come in that my house may be filled. He's not going to say, well, if they're going to be like that, well, then, tough. He's not going to waste the food. He wants to share it with someone. I can still remember, it must have been about a couple of years now, but it's stuck in my mind ever since, driving in one morning, listening to the Today program on the radio. And they did an interview with a sculptor who just won a big prize. I think it's called the John Turner Prize. And they'd sent the reporter down to view his exhibits and to interview him. And it was clear he was one of those sculptors who did all kinds of things with all sorts of bits and pieces of rusty metal. And the reporter didn't have the foggiest idea what was meant to be happening. He did his best to try and sound polite. But in the end, when he came up to the sculptor, he said to him the question that must have been on everyone's mind. Look, he said, what do you think when people can't make head nor tail of your work? The sculptor said, I don't mind. It's not my problem. And you see, there's nothing of that spirit in God here, is there? The host in this story isn't at all like that. He's very anxious that there'll be people there who can enjoy it. He'll go to extraordinary lengths to make sure he's got a full house. I guess Jesus keeps on stressing to us the generosity of our God. But there's something else about the host, if you look at this story. It's a very different truth about him. It comes up in verse 21. You discover that this host not only is exceedingly generous, but he can also be angry. The servant came and reported all the excuses that people made to his master, and then the householder, in anger, said to his servants, go out and bring in the poor. And not in a fit of pique, not in irritable anger, but in right and proper indignation. It's those excuses that have done it, of course, and you probably know that kind of proper indignation yourself. There'll have been an occasion, won't there, when you've gone to great lengths to prepare some kind of a dinner party. A lot of trouble. You put on all those kinds of extra touches you're meant to do when you're being polite. My wife would say to me, can we have the milk in a milk jug tonight, Hugh? You know, that kind of a do. You've done the favourite food of the people who are coming. You know, you've found it out, you've got it all ready for them, and then you've been stood up. You smile sweetly and think, well, you know, we can have it for breakfast for the next 3 weeks. No, well, nor does God. And when we do the standing up, of course, we shrug it off and say, well, of course, he won't mind. Don't say it of God. Don't treat him so lightly. Don't abuse his patience. He is not a doormat. Jesus says he's angry when people respond to him like that. Now, there's clearly been in this story some kind of double invitation system. Actually, we've got the equivalent today, haven't we? I might have booked up an evening with you months ago. And on your way out tonight, I just say to you, are you still on for Friday? That seems to be the kind of thing that's happening here. I'm told that it was a bit of a status symbol to get two invitations. You know, it's as if I ring you up and say, you can make it, can't you? I just want to check that the really important people will be there. Well, God's gone to all those lengths. He'll humble himself, he'll take that much care and trouble to get these people to the banquet, and he's met astonishingly with universal excuses. What they are themselves isn't really that important, is it? It's just fairly obvious that they're flimsy ones. The basic gist of them is, I've done a deal, I want to see what deal I've done. It's quite a lame excuse, really, because there's nothing you can do to undo it. They can all wait. I mean, I bought a field. I must go out and see it. Well, it'll look the same in the morning. I bought 5 yoke of oxen. I must go and examine them. Well, they'll look the same in the morning. I've married a wife. I can't come. Well, she may not look the same in the morning, but you'll still be married to her. I don't think he's trying to say I'm just off on honeymoon. Now, most of the married men I know don't stop going out to invitations once they're married. Someone else tried to make more play of this. They thought that the 5 yoke of oxen was some form of transport, a kind of souped-down Porsche. And I suppose if that's the case, then you've got business, personal, and family matters here. But whether it's that or not, what everyone is saying is I found something better to do. They're social climbers, aren't they? What they're really saying is I've got a better invitation. So sorry. They haven't even learnt the polite way of putting that. You know, the tactful one, which says, I very much regret I'm unable to come owing to a subsequent invitation. I mean, a previous invitation. See, God's invitation comes. They don't shriek in horror. They just say, sorry, I've got something better to do. The story isn't in fantasy land, is it? Not when you put it that way. And do Jesus' stories have a happy ending? Not always. This one doesn't. Look at verse 24. I tell you, none of those men who were invited shall taste my banquet. I tell you, says Jesus to his hearers, in case they hadn't recognized themselves in the story. None of these social climbers shall taste my banquet. It's not vindictive, it's quite fair, isn't it? Those whom God is rejecting are those who've rejected God. Yes, here's the host. An extraordinarily generous man. But don't abuse his generosity. Like God, he can be angry. Secondly, the guests. Now, the story was told to the religious Jews of Jesus' day. They had, so to speak, been invited once to the heavenly banquet by their prophets. The Old Testament fixed this banquet firmly in their diaries, and now they're being invited by Jesus. He's the servant who's going round saying, come, for all is now ready. His ministry, you see, throws open the gates to God's kingdom, announces its arrival. And he discovers to his astonishment that he has no takers amongst those who most staunchly insist that they've got the banquet inked in their diaries. And they'll turn it up in their file effects if you ask them. It's under future engagements. There it is, the banquet. But whenever he says, come, they say, I have something better to do. As they're turning their backs on Jesus, as they're finding more important things to do, like keeping their Sabbath rules rather than loving their neighbor, so he's telling them they're turning their backs on God's kingdom. You see, people love to have God without Jesus, don't they? People who can be very fierce about Jesus, nevertheless want to be staunch defenders of God, they'll say that they've got him in their diaries. Now, you can't have him without Jesus. To turn your back on Jesus' invitation is to turn your back on God's invitation. And the story makes it graphically clear. God is about to bypass them and bring others in. Look, verse 21. The servant comes and reports these excuses to his master, and the householder in anger said to his servant, go out quickly to the streets and lanes of the city, and bring in the poor and maimed and blind and lame. Maybe the spiritual waifs of Jewish society of the day. People like the tax collectors and the sinners, the religious dregs of society. Now, you've only got to turn over a page to see that this is exactly what was happening. Just come to the beginning of the next chapter. Now the tax collectors and sinners were all drawing near to hear Jesus. And the Pharisees and the scribes murmured, saying, this man receives sinners and eats with them. And if you've been with us midweek, you'll know what story follows. The next two individuals to get converted in Luke's gospel are a blind beggar and a rich tax collector. Well, you see, God is generous enough to go to those kind of people. He's been doing it ever since. I can vividly remember a couple in Norwich when I used to be up there. They were in a sort of alcoholics halfway house hostel. One of their friends got converted and invited them to come along. One of them knew so little about church, he asked his friend to book him a ticket one Sunday when there was one free. It's rather a nice picture that you actually need a ticket to get into a church. He told me of how the nearer he got to the church building, the slower he walked the first time he came. Well, they were bowled over by the generosity of God. They couldn't believe that God would be interested in people like them. They really had made a mess of their lives. I remember reading the Bible with them as very new Christians. And as we just sort of read a passage together, I asked one of them to read the next paragraph and discovered he couldn't read. And a few weeks later, going round to their hostel just to drop in on them and see how they were, and they started firing all their questions at me, and they went upstairs and got their Bibles down, and the guy who could hardly read was doing his best to struggle his way through some book in the Old Testament. I don't think I really knew my way through at all. Reveling in the banquet they'd started. And if the poor and the maimed and the blind and the lame aren't enough, we'll go out to the highways, verse 23, and the hedges, and compel people to come in. I don't know whether this is going further afield, whether Jesus is looking to the day when it'll go right outside Jewish society into the Gentile world, the non-Jewish world. But by the end of Luke's gospel, there's a Roman centurion who's converted, and the gospel's been ordered to be taken out to all nations. Well, it's got to you and to me. See, if you and I are Christian, and therefore we've a place at this banquet, it is only because of the sheer generosity of God, isn't it? He's picked us up out of the spiritual gutter, so to speak, to bring us in. These aren't flattering descriptions of us, and they're not intended to be. It's to guard us against the arrogant presumption of verse 15. Yes, we can be sure of our place at the table, but not on our merits, only through the sheer generosity of our host. The host. Our extraordinarily generous God. But don't presume on his patience. The guests. People who... Well, you wouldn't dream of having at such a party. But he's generous enough to share his banquet with. And lastly, the invitation. You'll see it at verse 17. At the time for the banquet, he sent his servant to those who'd been invited, saying, "Come, for all is now ready." But God's invitation hasn't changed since the day of Jesus. And the New Testament goes on warning the likes of us not to treat it lightly and not to presume that it's held open indefinitely. The need for an RSVP, the need for an answer, is still just as urgent. I know that as soon as you get to this stage in the sermon, some people are instinctively suspicious. Yes, well, tell me, who's going to be there? They're saying, what goes on? What do I wear? Will I know anyone at this banquet? Is it all a con, this Christianity business? Well, please just take up these Discovering Christianity cards again. Will you just have them open in front of you? Just see one way in which you might solve some of the questions you've got. It's been very thrilling this week to see how many people have got serious questions about the Christian life and are willing to use this as a way of trying to get some of them answered. Now, there may well be people here tonight. No, there are people here tonight who really ought to be filling in this. You know, beg, borrow... I was nearly going to say steal a pencil at the end, if you haven't got one, and make sure it's filled in. Tick the day you can come. You know, Tuesday, Wednesday. Oh, come on Thursday. That'll just give them problems, but that won't do them any harm at all. Come on Thursday. It's the only one you can make. Sorry, Richard. If you can't make any of those, just write help. That'll make him earn his pay even more, won't it, to try and see if he can get help to you on any other day. Doesn't matter which day you come, there'll be plenty of others there then. And then flex your muscles and try and rip it off. It's not too hard. There'll be some red bins by the doorway at the end. Just bung in the bit with the day you're coming on so we can have a meal ready for you. Actually, you can put anything you like into those red bins. Any bits of paper you've got, any rubbish, any checkbooks, just fling them in, sign them first. That's fine, but do that at the end. You may want to take some literature and start reading up already about the banquet. Well, we've got some modern translations of Luke's Gospel. I'll have them on a table in the hallway. Take it, read it. I've got another booklet called Ultimate Questions. I'll make sure you're asking the right questions. It even starts to give some of the answers. Yes, if you'll read it, take it. The invitation? Come, for all is now ready. And it needs an answer. Even those who've instinctively got 101 questions will need to produce an answer. There are some, of course, who've spent years close to the things of God here tonight. Don't really need to ask any of those questions. You've heard much about this banquet. You may have been baptized or confirmed. You've made promises to God or had them made on your behalf. Certainly resolutions about God will often have crossed your mind. You probably approve of the Christian scheme of things. That's not really your problem. The invitation is, come, says Jesus. For all is now ready. Now you can leave your track record behind. It counts for nothing. You come because of Christ's work, not yours. It's not one of those parties which says, to Hugh, plus or minus friend, bring a bottle, a record, and something to eat, and I'll provide the room. Now come, for all is now ready. That's the moment you've always balked at. You know, when you get to the end of the negotiating and it's just a question of the signature on the contract, the yes or the no. I can remember one damp squib of a holiday when we got so desperate we even took up the local offer of going round a timeshare thing just to do something one afternoon. We were very happy going round. It didn't mind what they told us until it came to the end of the whole thing when they wanted our signature on the contract. Once it came to the crunch, that's when I was starting to fight like a tiger. I was astonished how much I had to fight to get out of there. I just wanted my free gift. I see one or two people nodding. They've been through the same rigmarole. Well, friends, this is not a time share, but an eternity share. And this is no rook. Everything is ready. And when that invite comes to you in the past, friends or business or pleasure, they've always stepped in at the last moment, haven't they? We find it so easy to treat the things of today very seriously. And the things of God all too lightly. You've never ever got around to writing your RSVP. And the shock to those who were listening to Jesus at the dinner party is they discovered those who'd said no had their place taken by someone else. So tonight, when the invitation comes again, come, for all is now ready, how are you going to RSVP? I'll have to say, listen, I'm miles away. I've always really been a stranger to God and the things of God. I've just been dragged here from the highways and hedges, if you like. This isn't your scene. Our church is not your natural habitat, if I can put it that way. I talked about compelling them to come in. It may even have felt like that, the way your friend dragged you along here this evening. And you'd think that if you find a tramp under a hedge and tell him of food, he'd come running, but when he discovers you're taking him to the Mansion House and it's an all-black tie affair, or it's Buckingham Palace you're heading for and tiaras can be worn, well, you can understand him saying, I can't go like this. If you're wanting to say, look, I've never believed. I've never really thought about it much. If you'd known me, you'd never have asked me. I mean, a holy God wouldn't want a rebel like me. And the invitation comes very clearly. Even to the likes of that, come. For all is now ready. Do you know what the invitation says? Never mind the gap. Come. Now the postmark is stamped King's Cross. Because when King Jesus hung and died there on that cross, he opened the gates of heaven to let us in. Luke recounts as Jesus dies on the cross how the curtain in the temple, that great curtain that sealed off the Holy of Holies, the place which represented where God lived, like some giant curtain right across this wooden screen here, blocking everything out from the view of the ordinary members of society. Place into which only the chief priest, only the rector could come once a year, and that when he'd done all the right ceremonial bits and pieces. How when Jesus died, in a graphic illustration of what he was doing on the cross, that curtain was torn in two. Every Tom, Dick and Harry could see right in. Anyone could go in. You've never thought twice about it before tonight, but it's still for you. You come. Isabelle was a French girl. She came from a very poor family. She had worked her way through college. She'd do her studies during the day and after midnight probably, and worked her way in restaurants and things to earn her keep. When first she heard the gospel, her initial response was to say, "I won't take charity." You can understand that, can't you? In so many ways, that kind of attitude had been the making of her. It is lethal to adopt that approach to the gospel. There's no other way to get to the banquet. I know you never dreamt of being in this position when you came into church this evening, but nevertheless you are. Come, come, says Jesus, for all is now ready. How will you RSVP? Alan Bennett's got some of his monologues on the television again. They're brilliantly scripted things. He has one of them in which there's a disillusioned vicar's wife. And one of her great lines is this. She says, "That's the thing nobody ever says about God. He has no taste at all." That's another truth about God for you to take home with. I want to thank God for a tasteless Jesus. It's the only way you and I would ever get an invite to the banquet. Come. For all is now ready. What is your reply? I know some of you here tonight, some of you have long since written in with your acceptance. You're living in anticipation of it. But there'll be others tonight who need to accept. How do I go about it, you say? How do I say yes to God? Now, let me just be bold enough to tell you how you can do it. I had a friend once who was so appalling at ever replying to invitations. When you asked him to something, you wrote out the reply for him. "Dear Hugh, thank you very much for the invitation. I would love to come. Yours sincerely." And he just had to sign it, and you gave him a stamped, addressed envelope to put it back. Occasionally, you got an answer. So, in case you're one of those, let me tell you how you say yes to God. You just come clean to him. Just a very few moments, I'm through. I'm going to suggest we're quiet while we consider our reply. If you want to, you could echo the kind of prayer I'm going to pray then. This is what I'll say. "Lord, I'm sorry I've made excuses for so long." If that's you, you pray it. "Lord, thank you for giving Jesus to make heaven ready for me. I'm going to say, Lord, I accept your invitation to the banquet. Well, if you're able to get to it, yes, sign up for DC if that's you and shove it in the bin. Take some literature. But writing this card isn't saying yes to God. That's between you and him. Someone says, it's all very well about saying yes to the invite, but, you know, how do I go about saying no? You don't need to be told away, do you? Most of us say no by just never replying. Come, for all is now ready. You don't have endless chances. You won't have a more wonderful invitation than this. What's your reply? Now let's be quiet for a moment or two. Then I'll close us in that prayer. For all is now ready, says the Lord Jesus. At the banquet, then just echo this prayer in your heart. Lord, I'm sorry I've been making excuses for so long. Thank you for giving Jesus to make heaven ready for me. Tonight, I accept your invitation to the banquet. Amen.